Howdy, folks, and welcome to the Hunting Stories Podcast. I'm your host, Michael, and we got another great one for you today. Today, we actually connect with Tony Gilbertson. Tony is a world elk calling champion. He is a Phelps Game Call sponsored athlete, and he's just an all-around fun guy. I want to thank Tony, of course, for coming on the podcast. It was a pleasure speaking with him and hearing his stories, and it was really fun making fun of a friend of both of ours, Jermaine Hodge, just a little bit. That being said, guys, thank you for tuning in. I do want to apologize real quick. I recorded about three episodes with bad equipment, and this is the last of those. So my audio is mediocre. Tony's is just fine. Starting next week, we will get back to quality audio. So sorry about that, but thank you for tuning in. Make sure you follow Tony on Instagram. Give us a follow. Follow us on YouTube. I did just set up a YouTube account. And soon enough, I will eventually be posting videos of all of these podcasts. We'll get there. But thank you, guys. Now let's go ahead and let Tony tell you some of his stories. All right, Tony, welcome to the Hunting Stories Podcast, brother. How are you?
I'm good, Michael. How are you doing tonight?
I am doing real well. I'm really excited to talk with you. I know we've been trying to get this thing to happen for a while. I think it was before, I mean, it had to be like October, no, it had to be like August or something when we first started discussing maybe having you on the podcast. So I'm glad we were finally able to make it work.
Yeah, me too. Life gets in the way for sure. I think, you know, we had hunting season come up, and with as busy as I was back in August and, or I mean, yeah, August, September, and the first part of October, then we had some things to deal with as far as family goes. And so, but yeah, I'm excited to jump on here and talk a little bit about hunting stories.
Absolutely, man. I'm excited to have you here. Why don't we kick this thing off right? Let's just let you introduce yourself, be as detailed or as vague as you want, Tony. But why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself to the listeners today?
All right. Well, my name is Tony Gilbertson. I live in Vernon, a little town called Vernonia, Oregon. It's in the foothills of the Coast Range up in the northwest corner of the state. Been out here for about, 34 years now. And I love it here. I can get off of work and be out in the woods hunting in 15 minutes, you know. So
for you.
Yeah, it's I love living in a small town and can't stand big cities and just like being close to nature. So
but okay.
Yeah. Been out here for 34. Oh, go ahead.
No, continue.
Yeah, 34 years. Married my junior high school sweetheart. Been married for 35 years and have one son, and I guess I started my hunting, probably like a lot of kids when I was 12 years old. But my dad was a rifle hunter, not an archery hunter, and I fell in love with archery hunting. So I've been an archery hunter for quite some time now. Started off a little bit rough because nobody really taught me how to do anything. So it was a lot of trial and error, and honestly, it still is at times. I think if anybody says they've got it all dialed in and have nothing else to learn, they're either confused or lying to you, one of the two.
That's the truth, man. Yeah, I taught myself archery too, except I did it in the era of YouTube. I don't even know how you managed to get all that stuff done, Tony. I've only been hunting for, I want to say, eight, nine years at this point, and archery maybe six. So it's a hard thing to pick up, even when you have unlimited videos of everything you need to know. So credit to you for making that jump and getting into archery.
Yeah, we didn't have YouTube back when I started hunting archery, that's for sure. And I did a lot of solo hunting, especially around here, and which makes it even tougher, you know, and especially when you're trying to call bulls in this jungle that I live in. So,
yeah.
But,
yeah. Anyway. Well, I have a specific, I think this is the first time someone's ever said, I have to ask you a specific question. First question specifically for my guest from one of your friends. He was with you a couple weeks ago. You may know him. His name's Jason Phelps. And I spoke with him earlier today. He said that I had to ask you.
I know where you're going with this.
Yep. I might have the details wrong. I'm not entirely sure, but he told me that I'm supposed to ask you about your love for Impossible Burgers.
Oh my gosh, that guy. In fact, it's funny because I don't know if he's on a trip or headed somewhere, but you know how they post ask me a question or something like that on their Instagram page. Well, he did that tonight. And I asked him a question. I said, would you ever intentionally watch somebody eat fake meat? And I haven't seen his response yet, but I'm curious to see that. But yeah, I feel very fortunate. Jason has become a really good friend of mine. I'm on Phelps Pro team with Jermaine and a few other guys, and being Jermaine's been on here, but I told Jason, I said, I was, you know, looking really forward to working the Portland, the Northwest, Pacific Northwest Sportsman Show.
Yeah.
And, so I stayed with Jason at this Airbnb, and we'd stop at Starbucks every morning on the way. And I don't usually hit Starbucks just cause I'm not a big fan. And, you know, I mentioned I live in a small town. We don't have Starbucks. We don't have fake meat. We don't have any of that stuff. So we go to Starbucks and, you know, we're getting something off the little breakfast menu there. And I see things that look like an Egg McMuffin. I thought, well, I don't want one of those. And then there was this ciabatta roll. And I thought, well, I like that stuff. You know, I'll get one of those. And it said it was an impossible sandwich, but it looked like it had sausage and cheese and egg on it, you know.
Yeah.
So I ordered one of those and a coffee, and we go sit down, and I start to eat this thing. And Jason's looking at the receipt, and he says, who ordered the impossible sandwich? I said, well, I think I did. He says, do you know what you're eating? I said, well, I guess I'm just eating a sausage sandwich or something, you know. He says, you're eating fake meat. And I said, what? I said, are you kidding me right now? And no, everybody started laughing at me. They thought it was a big joke. But I really think that they heard me order it, and they were just waiting for him to get back to the table to take a bite out of that sandwich before they said anything. So I even asked, I had no idea what impossible meant. I mean,
yeah.
So I went up to the lady at the counter, and I said, hey, I says, is that sandwich really have fake meat in it? Does impossible really mean fake meat? And she looked at me and started laughing, and she says, yeah, it does. I said, you guys need to put a disclaimer on your menu from now on. I said, I can't believe it's the first time in my life I've eaten fake meat. And it's the last time. Now that I know what impossible means, and there's another word, there's another term for fake meat. Gosh dang it. Now I forgot this. See, I'm going to have to remember that one.
Yeah.
Beyond. Is that
right? That's it.
Beyond?
Yeah. I've heard that. I think that might be a brand or something. I'm not really sure.
Man, I can't believe it. I'm still, I told Jason here a couple weeks ago, I'm still seeing a counselor over that.
That's what he said. That's what he said. He was like, yep, he took a bite on accident, had no idea what he was doing, and he's still torn up about it. So
I am.
He wanted to make sure that I made sure the wound was still fresh, right?
Oh, can't let that heal over. Rip that scab right back off of there.
That's too good. Funny. Yeah, Jason was excited to hear that I was going to talk to you. But we're not here to talk about fake meat, no matter how much you want to talk about it, Tony.
No.
We're here to hear some of your favorite hunting stories, man. So why don't we dive into it? You can tell maybe the backstory, maybe the setting for the story, and then just jump into it, and I'll try and not screw you up.
Yeah, well, I'll start out, I guess, by telling a bit about the most recent hunt that I did up here in Idaho with BNG mentioned Jermaine earlier. So Jermaine, myself, Eric Berglund, and a few camera guys went up into North Idaho for a hunt. And we were supposed to go up there and film this hunt to get some footage of us calling and hopefully notching a tag to launch these new diaphragm elk calls that Phelps came out with for us, these signature diaphragm calls. So anyway, so that was how we ended up there together. So we get up into camp, and we all arrive separately. You know, it's like, I don't know, 9 hours for me and Jermaine. I think it was 23 hours, yeah, something like that. Anyway, and then Eric.
And he probably told you, but he blew out his like transmission. Like, so he killed a bull with me. And then he was hunting with Pat Luttrell for another couple of days.
Right.
And he blew his truck up. And so, like, he ran back to town to get his truck fixed just so he could get back up with you boys. I don't know if you knew that.
I did not know that. But yeah. I'll tell you, speaking of his truck.
Uh-oh.
So he drives, you know, 20-some-odd hours straight through to get to camp. and it's dark by the time he gets there. And I think they'd gotten there the day before I did. And I roll into camp and I see his truck there. And I had never seen his truck other than in pictures, but I noticed there was a fair amount of body damage on both right rear corners. It's like both taillights were smashed out and the bed of the truck was buckled on both sides. And so Jermaine, he was so tired that he got and it was dark when he got there, he got lost. And so
right.
The story goes that he's lost, he's pulling this trailer, like a little utility trailer. And he goes to back this trailer up and he jackknifes it. And he jackknifes it so hard that I think it was the side of the trailer went around and hit his taillight on one side and buckled the bed on that. I don't know which side he did first. Anyway, he's driving around up in the woods. It's dark. He gets turned around again. So he tries to turn on the other way, jackknifes it the other way and does the exact same thing on the other side. So he's got matching broken taillights and the pickup bed's all smashed in on both sides. So
he didn't share any of that with me.
You'll have to ask him about that. so that was kind of a fun way to start that trip off. So we'd never, neither of us or any of us had really hunted together before. We've just, you know, we've become friends through competing at the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation's Real Duck Calling Contest. So, you know, it was a good way to, you know, kind of start off the hunt there, just kind of get a laugh. But so I had my cargo trailer. I backed it into Eric had his there, and then Jermaine had a big tent set up with a stove in it, you know, and it was a pretty good little setup. They had a canopy with a tent or a canopy with our kitchen and we're out in the middle of nowhere and didn't have any Wi-Fi or anything, but one of the camera guys brought Starlink up there. So we were kind of sitting good up there. We had internet and
there you go.
Wi-Fi. It was good. But anyway, I think the first morning we hunted close to camp and we just, like I said, none of us really hunted that area. So we were out road bugling, trying to find elk. And we found a couple not too far from camp. But nothing really panned out with those. They kind of shut down. Didn't say a whole lot. It was cold. It rained up there a fair amount. So it was wet and kind of nasty. And my experience with those bulls, when it gets wet, most of the time it just shuts them down. They go to hunker down and they wait till the storm subsides before they start, getting vocal again. But
yeah.
Anyway, so that was the first day, but I'll get in kind of the most memorable part of this hunt for me was we one morning loaded up all the quads and we drive several miles from camp and we get back and we park the quad or the truck and unload the quads and I might be getting part of the story screwed up, but I'm like myself and Pat Luttrell, we're like away from Eric's truck and Eric got back to his truck and was going to move it. Well, Pat leaned his pack, this brand new Kafaru pack, right up next to Eric's truck. Eric kind of pulls forward and then goes to back up and backs up right over the top of Pat's brand new pack. And Pat's going, oh no. I mean, he's just standing there kind of calm, actually not yelling. He's just, Oh, my pack. Oh, no. He's going to run over my pack. Oh, he just ran over my pack.
That's a good impression of Pat.
and then he didn't quite make it right. So he cut it. He pulled forward, cut it around again. And I'll be darned if he didn't back over his pack twice. And Pat's going, oh, man, like he just ran over my pack again. I can't believe he did this. Anyway, that was kind of that was one thing that happened on that hunt. And then, we got the quads loaded up or unloaded and we had to ride this old road back behind this lock gate for, I don't know, a few miles. And we get back there, turn the quads off, get our packs on, and we start hiking back up in there. And there's several. It's a roadless area once you get back in there. There's a main trail that goes back up in there, and this is big country. It's steep. It's probably not probably. It is the steepest country I've ever hunted,
Okay.
and it's fairly thick. I'm used to hunting really thick country here on the coast, but it's a different kind of thick. We got a lot more underbrush. It is definitely thicker here, but it was still for what I'm used to hunting out of state, it was really thick. Anyway, we're hiking back on the main trail, and we come to this creek crossing, and the creek's probably, I don't know, I'm guessing 30 feet across, something like that, and it's maybe a couple feet deep at the deepest part. So we're trying to get across these, trying to figure out how to get across without getting wet, right? Slipping down and getting our boots wet or whatever. And so we're trying to hop from rock to rock to get across, and one of the camera guys goes across the creek, gets just about the other side, steps on one of those rocks, and it was slimy and wet, and down he goes, and he landed on his hip and bunged his hip up again a little bit,
Oh.
and his shin, and of course the camera went underwater,
Oh
and
no.
so that kind of fouled that camera up
And
for
the
sure.
backup
But
camera was in Pat's backpack, which got run over three times.
Fortunately, we had more camera guys there. So anyway, we kind of shook the dust off, or the water in this case, and all of us got across, and we sat there and ate a snack, and thought, well, we'll just, that poor camera guy wrung his socks out. And it's bad enough, walking around on that country and sweaty socks with, in your boots, but when they're all wet, I mean, my feet would have been torn up.
Yep. I've
Anyway.
made a trip to town one time. Our boots got soaked, and I went down just to buy a boot dryer because we were near a ski town. So I was like, oh, they'll have boot dryers somewhere. So I went
For
to
sure.
Walmart, found one for, $8, and now it's a permanent thing for my hunting camp. It's definitely something worth having around. You just plug it into the generator, dries a boot in 5 minutes.
Yeah, if you don't have dry boots, you can have a miserable hunt.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I'll have to remember that. Anyway, so we get our stuff together and we start hiking back in. We come to this big draw, and Jermaine says, "Well, why don't you rip off a bugle here and we'll see what happens." So I let a bugle out, and the first thing to respond was a pack of wolves. And I'm thinking, well, this isn't good, but I was surprised by this, but it wasn't maybe, I don't know, 30 seconds, maybe a minute later, and a bull piped off on the other side of the drainage.
Oh, wow.
But he shut up, didn't say much after that. So we just figured probably wasn't worth going up in after him if there was wolves there. So we kept on going. Got another bull to respond, and so we took off up the mountain after that bull. And I was the shooter that day, and so Eric and Jermaine stayed back, and they do some calling, and it took quite some time to get that bull worked up to where he acted like maybe he was a little bit interested and would start to come in. And so, but he would hang up. So I started working my way down. He was on the other side of the drainage from me, and there's just kind of this rock chute. And so I was up on this side of the drainage, and he was on the other side. And pretty soon, you could tell he was getting closer. He was bugling. You could tell he was getting closer, but he was hanging up down on the very bottom and wouldn't come across that rock chute. So Jermaine and Eric start following me down the hill, and they're calling, and pretty soon I hear something down the drainage further from where the bull was, run across through that rock drainage and up the other side towards me. But the bull's still down there bugling. I thought, well, that's got to be some of his cows, right? So
Yeah.
anytime I've had that situation where I've been able to call cows away from a bull, or I've worked my way in and got between the bull and his cows, man, if I rip off a bugle, that bull's coming on a string, right? I mean, he's like, he knows you've got his cows now, and he's going to come and take them back from you. So I don't know, Jermaine and Eric are probably, I'm guessing 60, 80 yards above me. So I'm, and I can see the bull. He's walking back and forth through the trees there. He's a good bull, but there was no shot. He was probably 70, maybe 80 yards from me at that point.
Okay.
And so knowing that those cows, I'm assuming what were cows, came on the other side, I decided to take my tube off and throw a challenge bugle at him. So I just rip off this high-pitched challenge bugle at him, thinking that's all it's going to take. And he decided that he didn't like that. So
yeah. You're a little too big for
it. Well, you know, it's weird because I didn't really, I've had friends of mine tell me in the past that, you know, I sounded too big, but I've called a lot of bulls in sounding like a big bull. You know, those bulls, when they get mad and they get fired up, they're going to sound big. They're going to sound mean. They're going to sound tough, and they're going to challenge you.
Yeah.
But anyway, he took off up the ridge on the other side, and which kind of surprised me. But then I heard some brush, you know, cracking off to the left of me. And so I started working down the ridge towards where I could hear the noise. And sure enough, here come two cows, I think, and a calf. And they were, I don't know, 10 yards from me probably. But so it was the cows that came across, but that bull took off. Anyway, so we all kind of gather back up again and try to make a game plan. And walked down across that chute, got up on either side, and there was a nice little clearing in there, and we sat there and ate some lunch, and pretty soon we could hear a bugle quite a ways away from us, so we got our stuff packed up, and we start working up the hill, and, you know, I don't know what it was. Those bulls over there just weren't really all that fired up. We would hear a few bugles, but most of the bulls that we called in over there came in silent. You know, if you got into a herd, you'd hear the herd bull, but he'd be quite a ways from us, and he'd have his cows down there, and then you'd have all these satellites come in around you, and we'd have two or three satellites come in, and we'd have the wind in our favor, and everything was going fine, and those bulls were within shooting distance for sure. I mean, at some point, some of these bulls were within 20, 30 yards at the most, and you just couldn't see him. It's just that thick.
Oh, wow. That's crazy. I've never had anything like that.
Yeah, it's nasty stuff. And then they've got this stuff called bear grass, I think it's called. I don't know if you've ever hunted country got bear grass in it, but that stuff's like stepping on ice.
I don't know if I have hunted bear grass. I mean, when I was hunting with Pat and Jermaine, they kept calling a bunch of stuff, you know, bear brush and stuff like that. I'm not sure if that's the same stuff. All I remember about this bear brush is when I did kill my bull, I was like, you know, I'm a novice. So I'm like, do I put the antlers up or the antlers down? They're like, oh, you're tall enough. Go ahead and put them down. It'll be easier to get out. And so I put them down, and now I'm just dragging these antlers through this bear brush for a mile. It was exhausting. It's like, you guys are, I don't know if you're doing this on purpose, if you're just messing with me or not, but like, it was awful. And I was like, I just want to get into the trees and away from this brush.
They're still laughing about that, I'm sure. This bear grass is just this clumpy grass, and it doesn't matter whether it's wet or not. You step on it, and you're going to slide. But when it's wet, it's even worse. I don't know what it is, but it's slippery stuff. But anyway, I'll get to a little bit more about that bear grass here in a little bit. But we start going up after this bull. We got to this area that had been all rototilled up, like I was talking about, and we could hear this bull bugling and sound like he was getting closer. And pretty soon we could hear this branch break. And so we knew he was getting closer, and he was within a distance where you think you'd be able to get a shot at him. But again, it was thick enough where you just couldn't. And then the wind swapped, and that bull busted off out of there, and that was the end of him. But so anyway, we kind of, from that point, we started working our way kind of down the ridge, and we'd found a trail, you know, looking on Onyx, we found this trail. So we started hiking this trail up, and the trail kind of started to peter out a little bit. And then we picked it up again, and there was we heard a couple bulls bugling across this deep drainage. and there was a trail heading down that direction. So we started walking down that trail. And by this time, it's probably, I'm guessing maybe, I don't know, 5 o'clock or something like that in the evening. And it's a long ways down to the bottom. And then those bulls were up the other side quite a ways too. And so I told Jermaine, I said, you know, I don't think we're going to get over to those bulls in time. And even if we do, you know, with our luck the way it's been today, you know, you get over close enough to them and they either shut up or the wind changes or something screws up. Anyway, so we decided to just keep, you know, we'd go down this ridge and go across the creek and then go up the other side to where the main trail was that we walked in on. And so we start going down, and it's getting steeper. And I mentioned that bear grass earlier.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like it was a wet day, but like I said, that stuff is so slippery. I'd step on this. I mean, you're literally grabbing onto branches, kind of lowering yourself down off this ridge to get down hopefully to the creek so you get across either side. And you'd step on that bear grass and you'd slide, you know, probably 10 or 15 feet until you could grab something and stop yourself. So we did that for a ways until we got to this big rock bluff. And now we're cliffed out. And we're like, okay, now what are we going to do? Because we're not prepared to stay the night up there. We don't have the gear for that. So anyway, Eric went one direction, Jermaine went another, and we finally found a way around this cliff. Again, it was steep, and got down to the creek, and it was, you know, again, you're having to walk on these slimy, slippy rocks to get to the other side. And we found a little bit of a log, you know, kind of an old dead log. You get across part of it. And anyway, got across the creek, got through some really thick, nasty stuff, and going up that other side, it was kind of one of those deals where you kick the toe of your boots into the hillside and you strap your bow on your pack and you pull yourself up, grabbing onto whatever you can to get up the other side.
Yeah.
And so we did that all the way up that mountain and finally got up the trail right about dark and got out of there. And, you know, it was a fun day in a way. I mean, we were chasing bugles, which got us into trouble in the end, you know, but, it was the steepest and nastiest country I think I've ever hunted up in there. But, and I didn't mention I forgot to tell you about this. So as we're going through, this is before we started going down that steep ridge, we're trying to, you know, find our way over to where we thought we heard this bull. And Jermaine's kind of leading the way at that point. And he's, I don't know, 10 yards in front of us or something. And all of a sudden that guy turned around and was on a dead run right back at us. And I mean, his eyes, you know how his eyes get when he's telling a story, yes, and he's really into it, you know?
Yeah.
Well, imagine his eyes being twice that size, and he's like running. I mean, he's like busting out of there. He's like, get out of here. Get out of here. There's bees over here. There's bees. He stepped, he had kicked a nest in the ground, and they started swarming. Nobody got stung, but man, if you'd have seen the look on his face.
Oh my goodness.
Oh, it was so funny. That guy, God. And the way he took off out of there, I thought maybe there was a bear in the brush up ahead of him or something.
Oh man, I got a story for you, Tony, that reminds me. So my early years hunting is muzzleloader in Washington. And we drew bull tags. You know, it's easy to get a spike tag in Washington. Bull tags, we were given a little extra time, but I had to go home for a couple days, mm-hmm, in the middle of the season just to, you know, put in time with family, work, etc. And while I was gone, my brother-in-law and my friend Steven, right, they were going to go move some cameras around, try and catch some movement, see if the elk are even there. And while I was gone, they put up a camera, and my brother-in-law's about my height, 6'4". He's reaching up and he's putting a camera nice and high on this causeway of just like all sorts of different tracks coming through.
Mm-hmm.
And while he's on this log putting the camera up, the log collapses underneath him, and there is a beehive inside of that log.
Oh, no.
So he doesn't think much of it when it kind of cracks under him. He's like, oh, it's an old log. But next thing he knows, he is swarmed. My father-in-law is there as well, and I wish we had this video because it was one of the funniest things I've ever seen. But it's basically him on a decent slope playing with this thing, and then all of a sudden he disappears running downhill, and all you hear is screaming. Just screaming, screaming, screaming. And so the story gets better because he loses his glasses. He gets stung. It was 30-plus times. Like,
oh, wow.
His face was swollen. His no. arms and legs were swollen. Like, he got bit up enough that he was like, I'm done. Like, I'll come hunting with you guys, but, like, I'm not going to leave camp. I was like, I'll cook. But he's like, I'm over it. That was the worst experience of my life.
Yeah.
And he also was like, go get my camera. So, again, my brother-in-law, he's 6'4". I'm also 6'4". My buddy Steven is maybe 5'7". So now me, who wasn't even there, is now officially delegated to return this camera to camp. So we come up with a couple different strategies. The first one we do is he gets a metal detector, for one, because he's trying to find his glasses.
Yeah.
But we get like a piece of Tupperware and a bug bomb. And so we come back a day later, we tape the bug bomb into the Tupperware so that the bug bomb kind of like stays in that one spot. And Steven walks in, pops the bug bomb, drops the thing on top of it, hoping he can clear all the bees out.
Right.
So we come back the next day and we're like, okay, let's see if that bug bomb worked. And we're sitting there about 25 yards, maybe 30, with our binos, just trying to catch movement. Nothing. So we got a BB gun with us because we're like, okay, we're not going to go test this. We're going to shoot that Tupperware with BBs until we kick something up or we decide it's safe enough. And so we're shooting the Tupperware. Bees start swarming again. Like, oh, God, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? And so we're like, all right, so we go back to camp. We're like, we'll go back to that tomorrow. They were calm for a while, so we think we have the opportunity. They didn't put the lock on the camera. So all I had to contend with was like the kind of like a backpack strap. Right?
Yeah.
Just hugging it to the tree. But again, we're talking this thing's 8 feet, 8.5 feet up in the air, something crazy. And so we were like, all right, let's just put on all of our clothes, everything that we have. We're going to duct tape our arms, you know, to our gloves. We're going to duct tape our boots to our pants. We're going to duct tape our waists.
Yeah.
And then we're like, well, what do we do about our face? So we put our hoodies on and we try and cinch the hoodies tight. I'm like, no, that's not going to work. They'll still get us. So my brother-in-law is also a little bit of a hippie, so he had, like, kale chips in these, like, Tupperware bins.
Man, that's as bad as fake meat.
Yeah, right? So we dumped the kale chips on the ground. We're like, whatever, we don't need those. And so then we put that in the gap, like, in the gap of our hoodie, right? And then we cinch that around. And it just immediately fogs up. So now we can't see anything, and we're, like, we're stumbling around. We're like, okay, this ain't going to work either. So we're trying to puncture holes in it. We're just trying to think of a way to, like, protect our faces. And
right.
We're doing that with, like, recycled, you know, grocery store trash, basically. So either way, we get there, and my buddy Steven's like, well, it's on you, man. Just go in there and do it. And I'm like, oh, this is the dumbest. And I'm the new guy in camp, so I feel kind of obligated because I'm like, well, they invited me. I'm just happy to be here. Sure, I'll go do it. And so literally 3 or 4 days of us game planning how we're going to do this, including getting taco-seasoned kale chips on our face. either way, I walk in there, and like I made up a little thing at camp where I could with my gloves on, practice
right.
undoing those little things. And I just walk in there, pull it, strip it, and walk right through. And no worse for the wear. Not one sting, not one buzz. But it was – I mean, we wasted so much time that we could have been hunting just like trying to outsmart this beehive. So it's funny that Jermaine had that experience. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
But I've got my own beehive in the woods experience. It's not fun.
Yeah,
and my brother-in-law, he had nightmares. He had nightmares for like a year or two.
Wow.
Just thinking about all those bees stinging him and screaming through the woods.
Yeah, getting stung 30 times is no joke. That's not at all. That's not good. Yeah,
yeah.
We encountered, I don't know, probably four or five different ground nests over there, and we had to find ways around them, and or you know take off running like Jermaine did. He just about run us over. It was pretty funny, but yeah, that was it was a fun trip. I call next time you see Jermaine. I won't go into too many details here, but. There was a movie, I can't remember the name of the movie, but there was this little Chihuahua dog that always humped one of them stuffed animals. I can't remember which movie it was.
Where are you going with this?
Yeah,
Tony?
Well, I'm not, like I said, I'm not going to go into detail. I will tell you that Jermaine, I'll just say that he loves it when I bugle. He loves it when I'm just going to leave it right there and picture the little Chihuahua humping the stuffed animal. I can't go into detail. I'm swore to secrecy. And I have nicknamed him Rico Suave, by the way.
There we go. There we go. Okay. Yeah. Well, that's good. I don't know if I want to ask him about that. I might just leave that one as a mystery, I think. I think that's where I'm going to leave that one.
Yeah, nothing happened. Nothing happened, but anyway, yeah. So that's kind of, I mean, we hunted around it for a while, went down a little bit further south, in the unit. Jermaine ended up killing a bull. It wasn't quite as steep and deep down there where he ended up killing his bull, but it was a great trip. I think I've become closer to all those guys as friends. Like I said, we hadn't hunted together before, and it was just good to spend some time with them. So,
yeah.
But
best way to develop a solid relationship with I've never actually been in hunting camp with a woman, so I'll say with another fella.
Yeah.
Go hunt with him. Get in the woods, spend some time running from bees, whatever it takes. Playing whatever Chihuahua game you guys are playing. It's just a great way to develop a really solid friendship, and I assume it would also work with females. I just can't speak to that. Yeah, there's nothing like it, man.
Yeah, I was speaking of hunting with females. Another quick story I got for you here. I learned actually a lot about archery hunting from a good friend of mine. His name is Gene Allwine, and years ago I was used to hunting around home here for the first few weeks, and then for the last week of the season I usually take off and go over to Eastern Oregon and hunt with those guys, and there was this and his wife would usually tag along, and so not that I got much to tell about his wife being there, but that just reminded me about this other hunting story. There was this one area that we hunted over in Eastern Oregon that every morning we'd get up probably, oh, I don't know, like 3 o'clock in the morning, and we'd go out and we'd road bugle. And we always had this area we went to where we knew the elk would come down off the top of the mountain at night, and it'd go down and feed in these meadows. And then in the morning, they'd take off and go back up to the top of the mountain and head their bedding areas. And so we were out road bugling, and we'd stop, I don't know, every like half mile or something like that. And we'd turn the truck off and just let things kind of settle down a bit. And then we'd bugle. And back probably 15 years ago, we'd do that, and we'd get, four or five different bulls on this one road that we'd go back and weigh in on. And we just find that what we thought was the hottest bull, and we'd just go back to it and park the truck and wait till it got daylight. Most of the time, we'd wait till it was daylight. But I got a little bit overzealous one morning, and there was this bull that we named Jurassic Park because he sounded like a a big Tyrannosaurus Rex, dinosaur.
Yeah.
He had the biggest, nastiest, deepest bugle you could ever imagine. And it was fun to listen to a bugle. And so we got out we located this bull and we thought, well, we don't need to go any further. This is the guy that we want to go after. We could just tell by his bugle. So we'd stay there and we'd set out there in the dark along this road, and we'd get our packs and our bows, and we'd just kind of sit there and just kind of wait for daylight to come. But every once in a while, I'd bugle just kind of see where he was. And, you know, I've been told this, of course, I know it from experience now, but, you know, these bulls have got an uncanny sense to like pinpoint where you're at within, I swear, like, you know, 20 or 30 yards.
Yeah.
And so, like I said, he would quiet down. He only bugle when I bugle. And so he would shut up, and then I'd lose track of him. So I'd want to bugle again just to kind of relocate him because he was moving. And so anyway, I'd bugle every, you know, 20 minutes or something like this, trying to figure out where he was. And the last time I bugled, it definitely sounded like he was getting closer, but again, he wouldn't bugle unless I did. So it was still dark. It was just starting to crack daylight, but it was in dark timber, so you couldn't really see much. And I let out one more bugle to try to figure out where he was. And that bull, I mean, I couldn't see my buddy. He must have been, I swear, 10 yards from us when he bugled.
Holy shit.
And, and both my buddy and I just, like we hit the dirt like somebody was shooting at us or something, because it scared us. we weren't expecting that. And if you can imagine a bull that, you know, like I'm trying to describe to you, that's just got this great big nasty guttural bugle, we're like, oh my gosh, this guy's going to eat us. Anyway, we hit the dirt. We heard him take off running. I don't know that he really saw much, but I suspect he probably heard us more than anything else. And so we got ourselves up, dusted ourselves off, and waited till daylight. And we started working our way in on this bull. And we'd get close to him, and he was trailing the herd. Every time we'd bump into him, he was the last elk in that herd. The cows were ahead of him. And the last time I saw that bull, he was across this little drainage from me, and he was looking back at us, and the rest of the herd was ahead of him. We played cat and mouse with that bull for like 5 or 6 days.
Yeah.
And the same exact scenario. He was the last elk in the herd every time we catch up to him. So one day, in fact, it happened to be on my birthday, and we locate this bull again, and he's probably 150 yards from us, and I call this calf away from the herd. And if you've ever called a calf away from a herd, I mean, they come in just this, you know, like a little baby crying, just meow, yeah, meow, meow, just like one after another. And she come up to us, and so I just, you know, we sat there real still and quiet, and I didn't want to scare her so that she took off. So finally she didn't see anything, and she starts moseying away, and we followed the calf. And instead of saying anything at all, any more elk sounds after that, we just followed that calf. And she cried all the way back to the herd. So I'm tracking. I can see the tracks from the calf. I could hear her. We're following her. We get up into this kind of this little knoll in the middle of this pocket of timber. And I look up, just kind of crest the peak of this little knoll, and I see ears. And I take a few more steps, and I look up, and there's all I could see was about 4 or 5 cows, and they have no idea we're there. The calf is caught up with the rest of the herd, and we start to take another couple steps, and the whole woods take off. Like down below us, the rest of the herd was probably 50 yards from us, and they were standing there watching us. We had no idea, because again, it was thick timber. And so they take off. the cows that were in front of us take off, kind of run in the same direction. Well, I had no idea, but remember what I said earlier, that whole week we were chasing that herd, that bull was in the back of that herd every time. So I'm thinking, well, there must be cows that took off to the left of us. I'm going to take off kind of at an angle and start running. My buddy took off at another angle, and I like intercept the herd. And by the time I get up to them, they're just kind of trotting. They see me and they take off. And I mean, it's just a cloud of dust at that point because we kind of got into this little open area. And I'm thinking, okay, there's a cow, there's a cow, there's a cow, there's, I don't know. He must have had 30 cows with him. And I don't see the bull, but I just remembered he was the last elk in the herd the whole week we were following them. So I get an arrow knocked. It was a brand new bow. I put this new rest on there. It was an old Hoyt, but it was fast. I had one of those first trophy taker fall away rest, and it was wide enough to where the fletching on my arrows were hitting that rest every time I'd shoot, and it was causing some weird flight patterns in my arrows. So I actually trimmed the rest on each side just a little bit so I could clear my fletching would clear.
Gotcha.
Well, I got my arrow knocked, got it on that rest, and pretty soon I see the bull coming. And I go to draw my bow back, and he's probably, at that point, probably 70 yards, and he's just kind of walking. And I go to draw my bow back, and my arrow falls off my wrist. I'm like, oh, you got to be kidding me. Here's my one. And it was a nice bull. I mean, he was a 300-inch bull. I let my bow down. I'm like, oh, I can't believe this just happened. I wouldn't even look up. I put my arrow back on my rest. I put my finger over the arrow. I went to draw back. And just as I got the full draw, that bull's 40 yards from me, out in front of me. And I always have a diaphragm in my mouth. And I cow called, that bull stopped. And I released the arrow. And that bull spun 180 degrees. And took off running right back the way he came from.
Wow.
And so I'm thinking, man, did I hit him? You know, I couldn't really see my arrow after I let it go. And so I'm standing there. By that time, my buddy catches up with me. And he says, did you shoot? And I said, yeah, I shot. I said, I think I hit him, but I don't know. You know, we need to go up there and see if I can find my arrow or find some blood or whatever. So he stayed where I was standing, where I shot. I went up to where he was standing and I'm looking around and I don't see anything but tracks. I don't see my arrow. I don't see any blood, nothing. So anyway, we start kind of following the tracks. And there was another guy that was hunting with us that year that was a friend of another buddy that was with us, and he kind of looked like an old hippie and wore like old army fatigues and had this great big, like big old Bowie knife strapped to his hip, you know? And,
yeah.
And anyway, he's kind of off in the distance. He finally comes up to us and he says, man, I saw the whole thing. He says, you were running through the woods, had your arrow knocked, and I saw you said, he says, you shot at that bull and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, yeah, I know. I said, we're trying to find, you know, see if we can find blood or anything. And my buddy and I were just, my hunt partner, we're like just nose to the ground looking for blood. And finally, I see this stick that's like maybe an 8-inch long stick and about a 1/2 inch in diameter, had a drop of blood on it that was maybe the size of a dime.
Okay.
So at least at that point, I knew I'd hit him. And this guy that caught up to us, he comes up to us, and my buddy and I are just like, you know, almost on our hands and knees looking for more blood. And he says, what are you guys doing? I said, well, I said, you just said you saw me shoot this bull and we're looking for more blood. He says, well, he's laying right there, right in front of you, like 75 yards in front of you, just laying there dead. And I said, I looked up, I said, sure enough, there's my bull. And so, I mean, I don't know. I guess at that point it was a long week. I went up there and I saw that bull, and I'd hit him high and hit him in the lungs, but he just bled internally. It just wasn't much blood that came out.
Yeah.
And so I'm standing looking at my at the bull I just killed, and it was the biggest bull I've ever killed. And just the experience all week hunting with a good friend of mine, and the work and just the effort that took, and the persistence that finally paid off. It was overwhelming. I was, my eyes kind of welled up a bit, and I'm standing there, and he says, "Well," he says, "you gonna like shoulder mount it, or are you gonna do a Euro or what?" And I said, "No, not many opportunities to shoot a bull like this. I think I'm gonna do shoulder mount." And so anyway, we got down there and started skinning this bull out, and this guy that we just met for the first time, he's with a buddy of a buddy's that was there,
Yeah.
takes that big. He says, "Well, I've never gutted an elk before. You mind if I, give it a whirl?" And I said, "That, sure, go ahead. Go ahead,
Oh
have at
no.
it." So he takes that big old Bowie knife off his hip, and just about pokes the gut. I stopped him from doing that,
Okay, I
but
was worried just like just straight into the torso,
yeah,
like on
right. I
the
mean,
side of
it was just about like that was what was going to happen.
Ugh.
So he gets that point. I stopped him. I said, "No, you gotta kind of start this way." And he says, "Okay." Well, instead of starting like I told him to, he just takes that knife and he goes right up the brisket, and he takes it and just slices it right down towards the belly, cuts it up way further than what you should if you're going to do a shoulder mount.
Yeah,
And I'm standing there looking at this, what he just did, like speechless. And my buddy that was with me, he's all pissed off, and he says, "What are you doing? You can't do that." And he'd had some taxidermy experience, so he's like, "No, you're done. Put your knife back in the sheath. You're done."
Yeah.
Anyway, it was a great hunt. We had a good time. It was a really good bull for the area that we were hunting. It was all public land stuff, and I've got that bull. It was a perfect. Probably the most symmetrical bull I've ever seen, 6x6, great big whale tails on him, and he's hanging up on my wall in my living room there. So,
Did the taxidermist do a pretty decent job on the on fixing the Bowie knife wound?
yeah, he did. But that bull, he was such a, I mean, he was just a warrior. He had both of his ears were split, one of them probably 4 inches. He had a big pus pocket under one shoulder, that you could tell where he'd been gored by another bull. He had
Yeah.
scars on both shoulders that, I mean, it was just the character of that bull that on his hide, that kind of total story of his life and the battles that he'd been in. I mean, it was it's not like a. It's not something you'd walk up. A lot of guys would go, "Well, that didn't really know any better," would look at it and say, "Well, that's not very good taxidermy work, or whatever. It doesn't look like it's a very good looking," and it's not a great looking cape on him. But I didn't want a good cape.
Yeah.
I wanted that cape because it told the story of that bull's life and what he had just gone through during that rut. And yeah, he was just a warrior. He was just an
That's
old
awesome.
warrior. So,
That's awesome. That's a great story, man.
yeah.
It reminded me, my first whitetail I killed, I actually killed with a double-aught buck shotgun.
Yeah.
And I won't tell that whole story, but the part that you reminded me of is I was sitting there being like, "Where? There's no blood," and I couldn't find anything. And my buddy comes up, stands next to me, and he's like, "Well, what do you mean?" And I'm like, "Well, I think he's gone, man. There's nothing, not a drop of blood." And I didn't know at the time, double-aught buck is not known for blood trails. It's it'll
Yeah.
knock an animal down. And
Right.
my buddy's at the t earlier, he was like, "Well, maybe you missed it." And I was like, "No, I saw it pull its leg in when it ran off. It was running on three legs. I hit it." But when I'm sitting there looking for blood, he's like, "What are you doing?" And he's well, I was looking for blood. What do you think? And he's like, "Well, it's right there." And it was 20 yards in front of me,
Yeah.
just laying there, through a bunch of whatever. It was just right there. You just get a different set of eyes sometimes. So
Right.
it reminded me of my story. And it's funny that the random hippie guy came up and was like, "What are you doing?"
Yeah, no, it, you know, when you're tracking blood, you get so engrossed in, especially if they're not bleeding very good. I mean, you got to really take your time and pick that ground apart so you don't miss anything. And blood trails, depending on where you hit them, they're all different. I mean,
Absolutely.
I shot an elk one year, and it deflected off a tree branch right before the elk. And instead of hitting that elk behind the shoulders, it deflected and went, and it cut the artery in the neck. And it just the after I shot it, it ran around in circles like two full revolutions right where it was, and finally took off. And I'm like, man, that's kind of weird. I didn't know what happened there. And we walk up there, and I'm looking for like spots of blood. And my buddy again, he says, "What are you looking for?" And I said, "Well, I'm looking to see if I can find some blood." He says, "Well, it's all over." He says, "It had rained that morning, but it was like this spray that was about 2 feet wide. It was just this mist of blood. It was the strangest thing." But anyway, it ran off 20 yards down over this embankment and died. It just bled out so quick. But yeah, you gotta be careful when you're tracking and want to pay attention to that kind of stuff.
Yep, every kill's different. My bull this year with Jermaine, full pass through, cut the whole thing on video. We didn't see a drop of blood, not one drop of blood, until we found that animal about 150 yards away.
Really?
Yeah, just a complete pass through. Maybe the blades were too sharp. I'll tell you what, when we opened him up, it
Oh
poured
yeah.
out of him. It poured
Yeah.
out. But even when we found him upside down, I mean, he ran 150 yards, reared up, and then fell over backwards, dead. So
No,
he
really.
was alive less than a minute.
Yeah.
But I don't remember where I was going with that story. Oh yeah, so he was upside down, and when we flipped him over, when Jermaine and I flipped him over, there was maybe a 1 foot by a 2 foot little pool of blood. Nothing really impressive.
Really?
So yeah, even laying there for 2 hours, because we gave him 2 hours, he still barely bled.
Wow, that's interesting. What kind of broadheads were you shooting?
Iron Will,
No,
the
okay.
single, or not the single bevel, the solids.
Huh. Yeah, I don't know. I think broadheads do play a role in blood trails for sure. And I've shot some single bevel broadheads, just two blades before, and hit some animals, and they didn't bleed all that great. And I've had guys tell me before that, the more blades the better, right? So
Heard that too.
they'll shoot, three or four blades, nothing but three or four blades. But I mean, everybody's got their own experience, and I know that there's a lot of guys that kill plenty of elk with those two blade single bevels or double bevels, and so I think it's just a matter of your preference and where you
Yeah,
hit
I mean,
them. But
it
yeah,
zipped
that's
right through
interesting.
him, put him down real quick. We just didn't find any blood. So, someday that maybe I won't be as lucky in finding him, and we'll spend hours looking, and then I'll be like, okay, time to switch. But for now, he got the job done.
That's right. That's right.
Yes, it did.
That
All right,
was a
Tony,
beautiful bull, man.
thank you. I'm pretty proud of it. I think we
Yeah, you
scored it
should
out to
be.
be like 312 or something. But it's left whale tail. It's like daggers. It's not the typical like point
Oh,
that you would
really?
see. It's almost like a serrated knife on both the edge there. Like he had some
Oh,
damage a
yeah.
couple of years ago or something. It's a super cool bull.
Right.
And hell of a bull for my first one.
Heck
So,
yeah. Yeah, that'll ruin a guy killing a bull like that for the first time.
right? Right? Never mind hunting with Pat and Jermaine. So now I got to go back to doing it by myself. I don't know what I'm going to do. So,
Well, you'll get it
but
done.
Tony, do you got any other stories for us? I tell everybody I'll listen all night if you're willing to talk. But if that's what you prepared for the day, then we can wrap it up, man. Up to you.
Yeah, I think that's all I had really off the top of my head and kind of somewhat prepared to talk about tonight. But it was fun,
Perfect.
man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no, it was a ton of fun, and I'm sure I would say one out of every two podcast guests messages me within half an hour of us wrapping up, being like, "Oh, I thought of some new ones. You got to get me back on."
Yeah.
So, Tony, I have a feeling we'll have you back on someday here in the future. Thank you again for putting up with me and how long it took us to schedule this, but it's
It's all
definitely
right.
worth the wait. Those are some fun stories. I'm excited to make fun of Jermaine to his face. So.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Let me message me. Let me know how that goes. He'll know exactly what I'm talking about.
Will do. Will do. Do you want to tell the people where they can find you? Your, you know, Instagram, any social stuff, or you just want to?
Yeah,
walk
the
off
only
into
thing
the
I got on Instagram, the bearded elk whisperers is what I go by on Instagram there, and I'm gonna try to I got a bunch of calls actually just before you got here. Maybe try to do some more demos on some calls and post those on there. I know I've got a lot of questions at the Sportsman Show about various calls that I use and how to use them and all that kind of stuff. So
yeah,
I'll be posting some videos here ahead of hunting season this year.
All right, man. And I'll mention it. But you had your own custom call put out by Phelps recently, and it's coming in like a 3-pack, right? With you and Jermaine, right?
Yeah. Jermaine and I and Eric Berglund, it's called the All American, signature series, and all red, white, and blue. We've all got, a little bit different specs on our latex and the stretch. I have a tendency to use a lot of air pressure and volume. I blow pretty hard on my calls, and as a result, I've blown a lot of them out fairly quickly. So it was really fun to work with Jason and come up with a call that is going to kind of live in that spectrum between the Maverick and the White Amp. If people are kind of familiar with those. And you know, I need something that's going to stand up to my style of calling, and everybody's a little bit different, but so yeah, it'll be myself, Jermaine Hodge and Eric Berglund. It's a 3-pack, and we should be able to purchase those online and hopefully in some retail stores, around the first part of July.
Perfect. Perfect, Tony. Well, man, yeah. Thank you so much. I do appreciate your time. And hopefully we have you back soon.
Absolutely, bud. It was fun. Thank you so much for the invite.
All right, guys. That's it. Another couple stories in the books. Again, I want to thank Tony for coming on the podcast. It was a ton of fun to connect with him. Hopefully we have him back on the podcast here again soon. Beyond that, guys, like I said at the intro, please make sure you get out there and follow Tony. Follow us on Instagram. Links to everything are in the show notes. Also, I'm putting a link to our YouTube page. I'm trying to get some subscribers there. We will eventually be posting videos of all of these storytelling sessions once I get the right equipment set up. So make sure you follow us there. And the podcast is also published on YouTube as well. But that's it, guys. Thank you so much for tuning in. I really do appreciate it. Share the podcast with one friend. Reach out to me if you have any stories. Now you know what to do. Get out there and make some stories of your own. Thank you.